What I've been doing lately is just following the season, right? So I wanted to enjoy the spring in Japan, and then I want to enjoy the summer in Europe, so I'm hanging out there. And when Europe starts sucking, which is any time other than the summer, I'm getting out.
Okay, sounds like you get around just a little bit.
All the businesses I have, I can just work from the laptop, so there's nothing stopping me. And I don't do much more client work, so I don't really need to speak to anyone unless I want to.
Shoot, when I grow up, I want to be like you.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
You're a master at CRMs, which is the customer relationship management.
Yeah, I've been involved in the industry 20 years. It started out with contact management like Goldmine and ACT and things like that. And now what we're seeing is really some incredible stuff. So it's been an interesting kind of ride to see how things are going, how they progressed, and really how folks are actually starting to use these tools to build those kind of relationships.
Take me back 20 years ago. How was it different back then from the way you're seeing things happening now when it comes to businesses dealing with customers?
Let's think about it. 20 years ago, that'd be, well, actually, it's more like the early 90s, so maybe 91, 92. Mass majority of people weren't even on email. And so, you know, there were hardly any cell phones, or that most people were walking around those big brick kind of things. So when you think about just communications in general, 20 something years ago, it was much slower. It was still a lot of snail mail. It was definitely a lot of regular phones. And so getting to people and building relationships, it took much longer to do. Now you have, you know, forget, you know, just email, you got instant message, you got social media, you got, you know, everything's mobile. And so you can find people halfway across the world. I mean, here we are talking, you're in Japan, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. 21 years ago, we wouldn't be doing this, right? So the mode and methods of communication have just rapidly changed the way that business relationships are built. And so all these things, social networks, mobile devices, broadband, have changed the speed of business and the speed in which people are looking for solutions to their problems. And if you don't have the kind of content available to them that at least hooks their initial interest and then transitions that into some sort of an interaction, and then be able to string enough of those interactions together to make them want to be your, you know, customer, it could happen in a blink of an eye, or you could miss out on a blink of an eye. 21 years ago, it was just the speed was just so much different.
Don't you think it was a bit better from the company perspective? You have more time to think, more time to respond, instead of like now, if you don't respond to someone within a few minutes, they'll move on to someone else, especially if you're in a commodity type business.
It poses good and bad, just like back then there was good and bad. Now there's good and bad. Good is, yeah, you can do a lot more things for a lot less money, and you have the potential to reach a bigger audience at a fraction of the price. The bad is everybody else can do that, and that means that the people that you're targeting are also being targeted by hundreds of thousands, if not, who knows, millions of people. So all that content and all those emails and all those phone calls, there's just a, you know, mass now. They exponentially grown. So how do you get your message through to the noise chamber? So it's good and it's bad, and it poses different kinds of challenges that than you had 21 years ago. But the folks who are successfully getting through are the ones who have that strategy. They have process. They have the right engagement methodology. And then they're using the right technology to implement all that stuff.
Well, I think it's interesting. A lot of the big companies now, they use all the automated technology that's available, and most of the customer services should. I mean, you call Verizon or any of these companies, and you're going to have to say one 15 times before you even get a chance to ask for an operator. So I think the small companies, I agree with you, there's a lot of benefits. You know, you can be a boutique of customer service in a way, or you can be like Amazon or Zappos. But I'm not seeing this working well for most companies. I just don't.
Well, you're not going to see it work well for most companies because most companies don't get it. Or most companies think that by buying a piece of software, just the act of buying the software, that they've done all the heavy lifting. And really, just buying the software is the easiest part of this. First of all, you have to understand why you're buying it. What specific challenges are you trying to solve? And then, do you have the right people involved in order to have the conversation on what's the best way to solve it? Do you have the right processes in place? If you have processes, are they the right ones? Are you missing some? Do they need to be tweaked? All this should be done before you buy anything. But most people look at buying the software as a Hail Mary, as just by the act of buying it, I'm going to hit that 50-yard touchdown pass. Most cases, that's just not going to happen. So you have to do the upfront work. You have to identify this. What are the challenges? You have to identify what does success look like. You have to have the right people involved, and you have to address the right processes. And then you implement all of that with the right technology. Most people don't go through that methodology.
A department has a hard enough choice of which software to pick. And by the time it gets through this whole process thing, the management might already change, right? So the people that bought this software and the people in charge now are completely different. And they don't even want to talk about the same thing that the old group was doing. So I can see that in a way. But on the other hand, you have a lot of people now working by themselves, right? Freelancers, just laptop-preneurs. How do they go from giving out their personal email and cell phone number, which I see a lot with the small service businesses, into implementing an actual CRM where there are other people helping you with this? There's maybe a first employee. What would you recommend?
You have to understand and really be specific with what is the pain that you're trying to solve today. Is it you need more leads? Or is it you need to convert the good leads you have, be more efficient in your sales process? Or is it customer service? You've done such a great job with sales. Now you're starting to get all the service calls. How do you manage that? How do you manage the emails? Or is it instant messages? Or is it whatever? So really having a not just a high level understanding, but a really specific understanding of what the issue is that you need to solve. And then also take into account, where do you plan to be in a year or 2 years? So you can have a foundation that solves the immediate challenges, but also gives you room to grow as you scale. And so you have to have kind of the near term and the long term idea of what you're going to be and what you are and where you're trying to get to. Then you can start to look at the different solutions, because the good thing about what's going on today is there's a solution for every size business out there, whether it be, you know, marketing automation based. So if you're a small company, you might be looking at an Infusionsoft or, you know, something like Pardot or something that will suit the purpose in that function. Or if you are really focused on customer service, maybe it's something like a Freshdesk or a Zendesk or Desk.com, but it's focused on what you're focused on. Or if you have a really big time sales function, a complex sales cycle and sales steps and stages and forecasting and all that, then there's something out there for you as well. But it's really understanding your business as specifically as possible, where you think you're going to be going with it, how fast are you going to be getting there with it, and then finding the solution that is not only going to meet your needs right now, but like I said, is flexible enough and will grow with you, and it has the right kind of support. So a lot of people look at functionality right off the bat, and, oh, well, it does this, it does that, it does that, that's great, but are they going to provide you the kind of support you're going to need? Do you want phone support, or do you want email, or do you want instant message, or do you want to have somebody that's not only going to help you from a technical standpoint, but also help you with the business process? You know, how do I make sure I get the right business process change in there, not just how do I implement a change in there? So there's a lot of things to consider, and it can be a little overwhelming. But if you start with really understanding your need and where you're going to go and where you want to go, that really helps to at least get you off to a good start.
Yeah, it is overwhelming. And the way you said it, I just felt, well, in the SEO business, for example, I like how you said, I'll let someone take care of the sales, which when the leads, when people call in, take care of that for me. And then the customer service. Once I get the sale, I don't want to talk to the people again. So right away, I feel like, let's get all these options handled. Yeah. What's the software for that? And I bet you there's not. Is there something like a one solution that fits all, or do you need something on both ends, like different types of software?
There are companies like Salesforce or Microsoft Dynamics or companies that focus really more on the smaller end market like Zoho that have all the pieces to the puzzle. That can be very expensive. Zoho is not, but like a Salesforce, yeah, you could be running upwards of $300 a month per user to do certain things. The cool thing about it is there are certain things that are more important than other feature sets. So you might be able to get something that's heavier in one area, but not as big on another area, not as deep or detailed in another area. And that'll be fine because that suits your need. Whereas if you need multi-channel support capabilities that allow you to get Facebook help requests and Twitter help requests and do things with chat and all that, well, then you might need to go with something that's a little more focused on customer support. But if you're fine with just providing email support, maybe you could get away with something else that's heavier on the sales side and not as heavy on the server side. So it really does come back to, A, there's pretty much a solution out there for everybody. B, it doesn't have to mean that it's one size fits all. And you really have to have a good, I keep going back to this because just people don't do it. Having a good detailed understanding of what you're trying to do, what you're trying to solve, and then you have a blueprint to go out and start looking at the applications that are out there.
I think you're right. In my head, it's like, well, what's the 80-20 for everything? But at the same time, what am I trying to solve? Because I would think, which channel is going to work the best for me? Right? If I'm a web design company, for example, or any web-based company, I just feel like I want to ask you, what's the best channel for me to focus on? And then let's not mess with the other stuff. You know, it's like it's all about the 80-20 these days.
It's always good to focus on what the mass majority of your target audience is doing. You know, it's always good to know that, well, hey, 80% of my customers are on Facebook. So that means you probably want to do something to emphasize Facebook in your interactions. Somebody might have a totally other kind of business model and their customers are more like, we want to interact via email. So it's always important to understand the target audience, how they like to communicate, and make sure that you cover those bases. You might have a very small group of people in your target audience that is going to want to communicate in such a way that it costs you money. So do you really want to service those kind of customers, or do you want to find more of the kind of folks that fit in that 80% model, which you built your business to kind of support? These are important questions. And I think a lot of companies, they kind of are afraid to fire bad customers because they're customers. You know, they bring in revenue, but at the end of the day, these folks may be costing you more money than they're bringing you in. So it may be better to have your target audience, and maybe you have your customer segmented in the three segments, and you cover the two top segments, maybe the ones that are bringing in 110% of your profit, let's say, and the other one is kind of costing you money. Well, maybe you need to start figuring out ways to find more kinds of customers that fit those top two categories and start to get rid of the ones that are in that third category because they're really costing you money.
I like what you said there. I love firing bad customers. It's one of my favorite things to do because it creates more room for better customers. What's the best way for re-engaging with a customer? What are processes and methods that you've seen? Because the easiest way to get a customer is to get your old customer back or sell them something again.
Right.
So give me some methods.
The company I think has done the best job of doing this is Amazon.com. I mean, what do? They created that Amazon Prime membership. So people who want to get their stuff in 2 days for free, you sign up. You pay an annual fee. It used to be $79. I think now it's $99. And you get your stuff in 2 days. And it's not just a book. You can order, like I have, a MacBook Pro, and I get it in 2 days. You can get TVs and get it in 2 days. So what they've done is created a reason for me and millions of other folks to come back to Amazon.com to shop, because I can get my stuff fast and I can get it without paying shipping on everything I buy. So finding things that are of value to your customer base. And then since it's a subscription and you're seeing more businesses offer subscription products and services, but if it's a subscription, then that puts the impetus on the business to make sure that they're providing enough value every month that the person stays signed up. So look at Amazon again. They started off with Amazon Prime with free shipping. Then they added the Amazon Prime Video. So now you get the streaming videos, and it's part of Prime. You didn't have to pay any additional money. You can do book sharing. So if you're Amazon Prime, you can share books with people. So what does that do? That just continually added on value to something, to that membership. And what does that do? That extends the length of time that people stay Amazon Prime members. And so by constantly looking at your business model and trying to figure out what kind of value can I add to the customer that's going to keep them around, that allows you to stay engaged with them on a more consistent basis. So I get emails from Amazon once I watch a video to say, hey, did you like that video? Was it good or bad? Give us a rating. Let us know what you think. And what does that do? That gives Amazon an opportunity to engage, and it also gives Amazon an opportunity to get valuable feedback that allows them to refine and offer better things that are more personalized and customized to each individual customer. But it also gives them the aggregate that says, oh, these kind of people like this kind of movie and they watch it at this particular time. So let's make sure we feed them that knowledge. Hey, we got more movies like this. Hey, you're going to want to check this out because you like this. That gives us more opportunities to engage. And so by being able to have some sort of offering and be able to offer great insights, great information that allows you to learn about the company or the person, and also allows them to get the kind of stuff they want consistently, that allows you to stay engaged with them, and you get this, have them as a customer over a longer period of time.
Amazon is a beast. Netflix is a beast. They have a lot of info. They're purely online. It's easy for them to do something like that. It's something that could be replicated for a lot of e-commerce stores. But if you're selling a higher-end product, let's say a one-off, then most people never come back again. They won't come on your website. How would you say re-engaged? How do you get them to share your stuff, to refer you, even though they probably haven't thought or seen you for a long time?
So this is where a lot of folks do things like build a community around their business. And what they do is try to find, and it's funny, it's because it's not the same level of business, but there's just talk to a owner of a company called wetshaveclub.com. Not the founder, but the owner. And so what he did, I think he bought it for like $4,000 because the original owner wasn't really getting anywhere with it. I think he bought it, like I said, $4,000, and they had 12 existing customers or something like that.
Right.
In a year's time, he went from 12 customers to 1,500 customers and $350,000 in annual revenues. Now, it's not a big ticket item, but the principles are the same. What he did to get the people to start talking about it was to identify the influencers in that particular industry. So find out who are the people that people are listening to, and then start to build relationships with those folks to understand, you know, what's driving the interest, to understand what they're talking about, and to feed into that, to facilitate those conversations and start to build a name in that industry so that he could then, hey, talk to them and say, hey, this is what we're doing over here. We'd love to get your feedback. We'd love for you to test it out. We'd love for you to write about it. We'd love to interview you to talk, get your thoughts on what's going on in the space. And so by doing that, they start to build critical relationships with the people that could open them up to that audience. And so it takes time, a little effort to do that. But once you do that and you're able to show that you're now a valuable part of this community, you're not only trying to talk about it from your perspective, but you're facilitating conversations with the industry experts, the thought leaders. You're looking out for the industry. You're looking out for this particular niche. That gives you an opportunity to build the right kind of reputation that can start you on the path to getting those folks on board with you.
So outreach to influencers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you're not actually building a community of customers as much as you're putting yourself in a community of the people that the customers will look to anytime they look to make a decision.
Well, customers, you know, people are smart. When they're looking for answers, what do? They go to Google and they search for, hey, is there anybody who can help with this? Or is there any information on this? And so when they find that kind of stuff, they look to see, well, who's writing it? And then they start looking for more of that kind of person's information. They have gone through the process of vetting the information and vetting the information providers. And if you're able to identify those folks, because you're coming from outside of the circle, so how do you get into the circle of trust? By finding the trusted voices and building relationships with them, or at least that's the most efficient way, because then you're hopefully allowed to leverage their credibility on your behalf and get more people to trust you a lot quicker than if you're just shouting about how great you are. So by having that kind of approach, you're able to get those folks that you probably wouldn't have get before and then convert them into customers in a much more efficient way.
Getting people to trust you is not as easy as it seems, especially when it comes to influencers. A lot of them are jaded at this point. So let's talk the podcasting world, right? A lot of interviews, a lot of people starting podcasts, and most of them, they don't give a shit who they're interviewing. All they care about is that you will share the podcast with your group and they can get more downloads. And I've listened to a couple of these and they suck. Most of the podcasts suck. I'll say 99% of them. They don't care what they're doing. They just want to get the downloads. They're hoping to get an advertiser. And then a lot of the influencers are like, well, you know, like I'm getting a lot of these emails, but I mean, the story you said, that's pretty amazing. Going from 12 clients to 1,500.
50,000 in annual revenue.
Oh, so he must have done something right, he or she.
He did a lot of things right. He found the influencers, he engaged them, he redesigned the website. Because it's a subscription box service, you know, every month they have the wet shave supply tools that go out. So they redesigned the website, they beefed up the copywriting, they redesigned the box that things are delivered in. They increased the prices by 3 times in that time period. So they did a lot of things. They used AdWords. They used Instagram. They used YouTube channels to have influential people talk about the wet shave industry. So they did a lot of good things right off the bat. And they saw tangible improvements in the business month over month.
The one thing that's missing out of what you're saying is a piece of software so far. Like normally I would expect someone to say, and they got it all done because of this platform. Because that's what people think of. If I can just sell through Facebook, I'm going to make all the money I need. But it's not. You just went through the whole process. It's a lot of moving components. And the influencers was just one of them.
People always go to just what you said. What's the software you use? Because all the other stuff is hard work. Like you said, you have to think this stuff out. You have to test things. And some things you're going to do up front aren't going to work. And you're going to have to try something else. You're going to have to go find the right people to get involved. It's not a just plunk your credit card down and buy the software. And through some sort of magic, your business is converted from being terrible to being profitable. And you know, you can spend all your time on the beach. Now, it just doesn't work like that. And I think once people finally get to the point where they understand it, and it takes some time, but when they finally get to the point where, okay, what is it going to take? And then when you start dealing with them and you start going through the little needs analysis, it doesn't have to be anything major, but you have to do something. You have to get the right people involved. You have to look at your current processes and see what's missing and what needs to be tweaked or changed in order to find the right technology that makes it easier for you to do all the stuff we just talked about. Until they get to the point where they can't figure it out any longer, they're always going to be looking for that silver bullet. And there's more folks in that particular mindset than I would like to see. Let's put it like that.
I would imagine. Once a guy wraps his head around all the stuff you just said, I think the software is the last thing on their mind.
And that's the way it should be. The software should be the last thing on their mind, because until they do all that other stuff, they're going to buy a piece of software and not have a clue as to what they're supposed to do with it.
But on the other side, if we didn't have all these crappy businesses, a show like The Prophet would never come on air.
Well, see, there it is, man.
I bet you get a lot of customer calls and people do ask you, what's the right software without anything else? What do you tell them?
I tell them the same thing. What are you trying to do? What's the challenge you're trying to solve right now? What's the challenge you need to solve in the future, in the next 6 months to a year? Because that'll tell you, at least get you down the road to what's the right software you're going to need.
And I'll be honest, how many other clients actually have answers to these questions?
They hardly ever have answers to these questions.
So what do you do then?
So I tell them, hey, if you really want to get the right thing, this is what you need to do. Here's a couple of steps you need to do. If they don't want to do it, that's fine. Because more likely than not, most of them aren't ready to do that. When they're ready to do that is when they're hurting the most. When they're losing customers a handful at a time. Or they're trying to bring on new salespeople and they don't have time. And say it's like the owner is the only person who really knows the full-blown sales process and it's in his head and he's trying to hire new people and he gets frustrated because the new people always have to ask him questions and that takes him away from what he's trying to do. That's when they start looking for things. And so it's always got to be, it always seems to be when they're on the brink, you know, when they're getting ready to jump out the window, so to speak. Then they say, okay, what do I have to do?
When shit hits the fan, that's when breakthroughs happen.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, when you have no customers anymore for some reason, you're behind on your mortgage, it is not the time to start doing SEO. When you're having heart attacks because you can't get an hour off, it's not the time to start creating SOPs. I mean, you got to get into that before. So the digging deep part, I think, is really hard for a lot of business owners. I think until something happens, something bad happens, they don't really think about how to change things, how to make them more efficient. So last week, I got a guy asking me, and you probably get this too, I'm thinking of setting up a live chat on my website. Should I outsource it or should I do it myself?
I always say to that, how much of your business IP do you really want to outsource? Do you really want this outsourced knowing your customers better than you do? And a lot of folks don't quite understand where I'm coming from with that because they see support as a cost. I see it as an opportunity to keep a customer longer. And the better you know your customers, the more likely that you're going to keep them around longer. Now, of course, you only have so many hours in the day and certain things you may have to offload. That's why you have to understand your customer segments and understand how much our customers are worth to you and make sure that your A-list customers, the customers that are bringing you big time revenue and profit, you want to make sure that they have as good a support experience as possible because you want to keep them longer. So maybe you give them a special channel. Maybe you give them more access to you or whatever because that's going to pay off. And maybe your C-level customers, you don't give them that, but you got to give them something. So it's really important to set up your service model to make sure it maps to your customer engagement model. A lot of folks don't get to that level.
That's a good distinction. Whenever I build a business or a new part in my business, the first thing that comes to my mind is how can I take myself out of the equation? Because I don't want to work in that business. I want to work on the business more than anything. So I do want to create the SOPs and I do want to get everything in the hands of someone else as quickly as possible. At the same time, I do like working with people I like. And if they're spending a lot of money, I do allow a better contact, customer service, because I do give personal info, right? So, you know, if you need something, email me. But for a lot of other things, I do think we can outsource it. I do think once we find out the first few customers and kind of get a grip on how things are going, we don't really need to be in there in the trenches. I think it's actually counterproductive.
I have a thing I've been using for years. It's called the pyramid of customer loyalty. And I break the pyramid into kind of three areas of CRM. And I call it finding, catching, and keeping good customers. So at the bottom is the finding part. And that's your customer acquisition. You're doing your lead generation, all the things that you do to try to drum up new business. And that we all know that's where a lot of effort and time is spent by the majority of people, trying to drum up new business, trying to find new leads, trying to, you know, bring those leads on and sell them. So that's the find part at the lower end. And that takes up a lot of time and effort. And then there's the catch part, which is, all right, now that we've identified the folks that we want to go after through our lead generation activities, this is how we go about bringing them on board as customers. So we go through our sales cycle and the stages, and, you know, we do our needs analysis and our demonstrations and all that negotiation, all that kind of stuff to get them on board. And if we're able to get them on board, you just went through two of the most costly phases in terms of time and money and resources and all that kind of stuff. So the last thing you want them to do is to walk after all that. So now you've gone your fine, you've done your catch. Now you go through the keep part. And the keep part is where you make your money, because the keep part is the relationship building. How do you, you know, understanding their business, understanding their needs, like you were saying, giving them more access, really getting to know what who they are and what they're trying to do in the long term. Because if you're able to spend more of your time up there in the keep, as opposed to down there in the find and catch, then you're able to turn one-off customers into long-term customer loyalty kind of people, but also those advocates that bring you folks and don't cost you a dime to get those folks. But you don't get brand advocates just by doing the minimum to make them a customer. You get them from turning them into just a one-off to somebody who really looks at you as a partner, as an advisor, and then they become your advocate. So you're right. If you can automate as much of those two bottom layers as possible, so if you can automate your lead generation process, if you can automate your sales process as much as possible, then what does that do? That frees you up to go up top to the keep part and build those long-lasting relationships that get stronger and more intimate, and then turn them into loyal customers, and then hopefully into advocates that start to bring you customers. They're talking about you all the time. They're bringing you people. And if you're able to do that, guess what? That cuts down the price of those lower segments again.
Many businesses go through that whole cycle. They'll get the customer, they'll sell them something, they'll collect an email or a phone number and start the friendship, but they never reach out to them again. They'll put that email off to the side or that phone number and be like, well, this is my list of customers, but I just never talk to them again. So how often should someone talk to a customer? Because you don't want to become spammy. You don't want to become that nuisance guy that just keeps emailing someone like, you know, did you check out my new offering every single week? But at the same time, you don't want to never talk to them again.
I think on average, and I've seen this in a couple of different reports, on average, it takes about 7 to 14 interactions to turn a prospect into a customer. So most folks, like you say, they stop at one or two interactions. They may stop at an email when they don't get a reply. Then they kind of forget about it. And that's why some of these automated tools really help, because you can set up email go out on a Monday. Maybe another email goes out on a Thursday. Maybe next week you follow up with a tweet or something. But it's an automated approach to stay connected, to try to stay engaged. You want to make sure that when they go through their buy process, they think of you. And the only way that you're able to do that is if you're constantly feeding them information, some insights, and you can tell, I mean, they have the ability to unsubscribe. They have the ability to not click or not open. So you have to figure out the kind of information that's going to impact their buying decision based on, you know, your previous sales, and build an interaction chain that allows you to stay connected long enough for them to start their buying process in earnest. And you can be a part of that. So that's where the software comes in. That's where the marketing automation comes in. That's, you know, that's where all these things that are out there that are great tools start to become great tools. But most cases, you haven't gone through the, well, how, what are the steps that typically our customers go through from click on a Google search to hitting the buy button on our website? And if you don't do that analysis, then you really don't know the process. So we call it the customer life cycle or the customer journey. And then you won't be able to feed that journey at the right time with the right information. And if you don't do that, then you don't optimize the opportunities you have to get more people to become your customer.
How would that be different for, let's say, having a mailing list that you got interested in something? Let's talk about a Kickstarter campaign, for example, because it's a different type of sale, but it's still, in a way, a sale. Right, so you have a mailing list. You showed the people something that might be coming out. They might be interested in it. And you want to shoot off the right amount of emails before the Kickstarter starts to get them engaged, but you don't want to overdo it. What would the middle ground be? Like, how would you, like, what would your recommendation be for someone doing that?
The first thing I would recommend is to kind of do some research on Kickstarter campaigns and see which ones are the most successful and look at why are they successful. You know, how did they go about putting their campaign together? How many communications did they send out? And just to kind of get a sense for how these things operate. And then you try to look at your own customers that you're trying to find more of them, you know, from these Kickstarter campaigns, and look to see what's been successful with your interactions with them. And then you try to figure out, because it's going to be an iterative process, because you're not going to get it right, you know, right off the top of the bat. So it's really important for them to really understand that, once again, there's a lot of upfront work that goes into this. You got to do your research on Kickstarters and which ones are good and which ones don't work. You got to do your research on what do customers that your current customers have that you're trying to find more like, what have they reacted to positively or negatively? And if you're able to do that, at least that gives you a decent start. And then this next part is, all right, learning, iterating, trying, you know, tweaking and changing. It's all things that you have to get used to doing today.
So you recommend reverse engineering in a way?
Absolutely. I mean, why not look at what works and try to figure out how to use that? And why not look at what doesn't work and look to how to avoid that? And that'll get you at least a start.
I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan of calling up your competitor and acting like a client and doing it to a lot of them and seeing the whole process, seeing what they're doing. Especially if they're bigger and more successful than you. That's one of my favorite things to do, to act like a client and just call people up and email them and see what's going to happen.
Absolutely.
All right, Brent, where would people find you if they want to get in contact with you or just chat with you?
Absolutely. I'm pretty easy to find. You know, I always say just Google Brent Leary and you'll see a whole bunch of stuff there. I'm at Brent Leary on Twitter. BrentLeary.com is my blog. Just feel free to reach out.
Cool. I'll put all those links in the show notes. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.